Nice to meet you. Okay, so we're looking for the approval of the agenda as circulated.
So moved.
Been moved. Seconder? Okay, seconded. Questions on the motion? All in favor? Signify by raising your right hand. Against? Motion carried. The approval of the minutes, it's really acceptance of the notes from the meeting, I think, is how it's done. All those in favor? Against? Approved. Business arising from the minutes, 4.1, on page 2 of the package for this meeting. So Chris has a letter there indicating that the items were approved by council, and it's shown on there the amounts. And I suspect that that actual was at the meeting in those amounts or not. Yes. Okay. All right.
That's a 2%.
So no extra money?
No.
No. Okay. I'm just kind of wondering it. What may
2%, yeah.
I meant maybe went with 3 CPI, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thing you want to point out on that? So it's been approved. Now the next item 5 is Lunenburg Regional, and I was in the same place I was for that meeting.
But I wasn't in the meeting.
Oh, so there was no report then from Lunenburg Regional.
Yeah, it was no meeting.
That's the
there was no meeting.
Oh, even better.
It was canceled.
It was canceled, rescheduled, and canceled again.
It was rescheduled to February, yes, I remember that.
And then it was canceled.
And that I do know was canceled.
The roads were bad, so they didn't
yes.
Yeah, it was during the ice.
Oh. So it's even less to talk about then.
I thought Brian wasn't available, but they couldn't do it.
No, not really.
Panama.
Living a life. Living the dream. Okay, so we're on to new business, item number 6, and 6.1 is the draft training strategy, and it's on pages 3 to 15.
It was, there it comes.
And it'll be on...
It should come up on these once it wakes itself
yeah.
up.
Yep. There.
Just a click.
So, Chris, I'm assuming you're taking, or...
Alex.
Okay, Alex. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Brian. So those of you who are on the committee in the last term will remember this presentation because I gave it once. I'm going to go over it again because it has been a while. We've had an election in the meantime, and I'm more than happy to answer questions as we go. I'm presenting this work, but it came about as a result of a subcommittee of the Lunenburg Regional Group. They were specifically focused on training and things that we could do as a region to enhance that. So back in 2023, this group did a strategic work plan identifying areas that we wanted to focus on. Training strategy was an important part of that. And so we began working with Lunenburg Regional last year to look at what might go into a training strategy. And we would like to work through a plan collaboratively with Lunenburg Regional to talk to firefighters in the county. And get some input and work with council on adopting something so that we can enhance what's going on. So this is some of the background information. The report's in the package as well, so this is just a high-level overview of it. We do have over 600 volunteers. In the report, we note that Lunenburg County has an aging population that's a concentrated effect in the fire service. We don't have complete demographics, but we do know we have a high proportion of senior citizens who are firefighters. I think the average... Was that the average age from the 3 departments on the west side of the Lehave that we had? It was 56? Yeah. And certainly not trying to belittle the volunteer contributions of more senior firefighters, but there is a physical component to firefighting, and it is important to have a diversity of ages so that you don't have a large crop aging out of your fire department at the same time. And then there's a pretty wide variety of training that's provided by the different departments or required of departments for their membership to have. The existing opportunities for individual training, we have developed in this area a local level one firefighter training program. The group of volunteers that do this do exceptional work, and they're putting on these programs without financial compensation and giving that basic required level of firefighter training to a number of new volunteers in our area. We also have the Nova Scotia Fire School, although they have had some well-publicized issues around safety. And historically, I believe there's been some tension, at least, between our region and the fire school, just in terms of the flexibility and making sure that, for example, if folks miss a session, are they able to make up and that kind of thing. And I think that that relationship was improving. However, there have been some serious issues relating to the safety concerns that came up after the death at the fire school that to date haven't been addressed. And then there is some online training available that can be taken as well. So in terms of the issues that we identified with the working group and then discussed again with this group last year, we do have that aging population of volunteers. And there's also changing societal circumstances where the way that people volunteer is changing, the demands on folks in terms of the more households needing two incomes in order to support themselves, greater balance in childcare sometimes is taken into account. So you have fathers being more involved in childcare and maybe less able to commit to large volunteer hours. And the fire service traditionally has been skewed gender-wise, although that is also improving somewhat. The local level one training is a fantastic program, but it is a huge burden on the volunteers, and there's a great risk of burnout for those volunteers, just in terms of the time that they have to spend not just teaching but also preparing the courses, and then just doing administrative work, tracking which students have come and making sure that all of that information is taken care of so that they can confirm that students have completed the training. And the other note around that is that the training program gets the basic level one skills, but it's not a certification. So if you wanted to get certified as a level one firefighter, you would have to go to the fire school. Similar to the level one training, we believe there's a lack of trained volunteers in a couple of different areas that are pretty critical. Folks with actual training for an officer role, and also drivers and pump operators. So we expect that there'll be more retirements as our older firefighters age out, and there are currently no local training opportunities for these. And then there's a concern around facilities. So there's limited access to fire grounds for training in the county. We have some small facilities, which are listed later in the presentation. And with the issues around the fire school, some folks have raised safety concerns about going there, and then we're waiting for them to address those issues. Actually, I think this slide is a bit of a duplicate, just covering some of the discussion that was held at the last Fire and Emergency Services, just talking about some of the issues that we've been facing and trying to address. There's a set of goals that we're looking to establish. So get a baseline for the level of training and then increase the number of level one firefighters, trained officers, driver operators, and see if we can increase opportunities for mutual aid training between departments. So our preliminary recommendations that we are working on are working to enhance the volunteer program that's in place right now. There was some discussion about whether or not we should be looking for certification or training, but the recommendation from the subcommittee and then the discussion at the Fire and Emergency Services Committee to date is still suggesting we should focus on training rather than achieving certification. We would like for the curriculum to be standardized, also as an incentive to try and get more folks through the program, provide an honorarium. So if you complete the training, then you would get an honorarium and increase the number of people that are able to flow through that program. In order to do some of these things, there is absolutely need for some kind of administrative support so that the volunteer trainers aren't trying to do all of that. We don't have spare administrative capacity in the municipality at this time, and that might not be the most cost-effective approach, but there was some discussion about whether or not some funding might be available in order to provide for some contract work, for example, through the Lunenburg Regional Group to offer that. Around the actual trainers themselves, the subcommittee that was having these discussions identified that it would be good to establish minimum qualification so that there was a base level of training for the folks that are actually giving the training. In order to avoid that becoming a barrier, it was suggested that we should provide funding so that the volunteers aren't themselves having to bear the cost of that training. And then there should be some form of stipend so that it's not volunteer. There's compensation for that. So we'd like to expand the pool of volunteers or the pool of trainers and then compensate them for the time that they're giving up, because this is a volunteer job on top of their volunteer jobs with the fire departments themselves that they serve. So then there's a couple of recommendations around trying to promote that training, make sure that all firefighters in Lunenburg County are aware of the training and the opportunity to take it, and that it is designed to be flexible to try and acknowledge the fact that you're a volunteer that's taking the training. Also promote the fact that we'd be offering honorariums for graduates of the programs. And there is currently a budget, municipal budget, for a grant that goes to Lunenburg Regional for training purposes, the training grant. And there was discussion that this type of grant should be maintained in some form to ensure that there's training beyond just basic training for level one firefighters or driver operator training. So then there is some discussion about the training facilities. Just quickly, this is a summary of the current local facilities. So as you can see, they're distributed across our region. They're investments made by those particular departments, although most, if not all of them, have open invitations to other departments to come and train at those facilities. Chris did some work having a peek at what some other regional training facilities look like. So that included Lesser Slave Lake Regional Fire Training Facility, one in Comox, Hants County, and the Pugwash Fire Training Grounds up in Cumberland County. And then this was a list, combined list of suggestions that came from FVSC and the working committee on the training file, as well as some of the components that were found in those other regional facilities of things that could be included in that proposed regional training facility. So that's the very quick reintroduction or introduction for folks who hadn't seen it before. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but it would be good if the committee had some discussion about confirming that we're still on the right track. Our next steps, I believe, would be look for confirmation from council that they're comfortable sharing this with the wider fire service to get some input on it.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I have to. I would agree that it needs to move to a point where it can be exposed to the general fire service, right? So,
can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
So there was a local, there was another level one program put on last year in Day Spring, but the fire school instructors did that. Was that a hybrid program?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that went really well. There was good attendance to it, and there was good feedback from the students that took it. Again, the fire school does have really good trainers, and they have good programs. But the cost is sometimes limiting. There's one small department that took the training, had five people in it. It was over $10,000 for five firefighters to take that level one basic training. Did anybody certify, do you know?
They're going last month.
So they're going to be some certifications. So that's good. Yeah. So there are some opportunities there. And, you know, we might be able to look at some other things for some pump testing and other things like that, or some pump training and the driver training maybe too. But there's some other avenues out there that also offer some of that training. So,
are those also through the fire school, or is it another provider?
There are other providers, but the fire school does pump ops and other training like that too, right? So is there driver training through them too?
Yes,
now?
They do emergency vehicle
That's right.
training and traffic management.
Yeah.
Which they just said today are now being covered by Levy again.
Oh, so they got the money back. Oh, that's good. Some of it, yeah. Okay. So there are some different components out there. The local level one program is just, I guess I can speak to that. They just started back up again, so they had one weekend done, and there's one this weekend. How many students are enrolled in it this time? 18?
18 or 19 is right around that.
So that seems to be the kind of standard they're working on for, like, when they do the level ones. Some of the things we should think about, too, is if we go to, like, a stipend or some kind of a payment down the road, we're going to have to look at probably some kind of insurance coverage for those instructors that are now getting paid to provide that service. That was something that came up when talking with the risk analysis people at the insurance groups. As long as we're doing it with ourselves and our own firefighters, it's not really an issue. And they say if you get like gas cards or something like that for expenses, kind of. But once you start taking like an hourly rate wage for like training for so much of your time, then that next risk factor comes into what if something happens and they say, well, that's how I was trained, right? So it's kind of like a liability coverage for instructors. So that's something would have to be looked at a little bit. And a couple of areas like in Pugwash and some of those places, I asked what they were doing, and one of them did and one of them didn't, but they were all looking into actually getting coverage for, because they actually have instructors that are on there on a regular basis that do training, just to make sure everybody's got coverage in place in case anything were to happen. So that's just a little bit of, I guess, new information and updated information from your report since we talked last.
Thanks, Chris. Yes.
And also just in terms of having updated information, I think one of our issues is that we have a gap right now. We don't have... Lunenburg Regional or Lunenburg County has the right to have a representative on the fire school board, and that position has been vacant for several months now. So I think some of the information flow isn't making it out. But just since you mentioned it, Alex, most of the safety concerns that were brought up over the summer have been addressed. And if we had a line of communication, then I'm sure that message would have been sent. But yeah, I can probably, if you're interested, I can provide more detail. But a lot of that work was done during the... 2-week shutdown period. It was a lot of paperwork stuff, so a lot of that has been addressed. But like I said, we don't currently have a voice on the fire school's board, so it's unfortunate. But yeah,
that was cleared like November, wasn't it? Something like that.
What's that?
They were cleared around sometime in November.
The shutdown was for about, I think, 10 days in August, and they were allowed to reopen. After that, so in terms of occupational health and safety, they were cleared in the labor board, and there was more work that was done, but essentially it was cleared enough that they were able to go back and continue operations, including the live fire training and stuff. there was a few other concerns with some of the facilities that were separate to this, that they were having issues finding people who could do work on them, that sort of thing. But, yeah. But generally, the concerns that were brought up by the Department of Labor, I can't remember what their current name is, but those were addressed, so, yeah.
Thanks, Emily.
Yeah. I'm just curious, why don't we have someone on the board for the training school? Couldn't we fill it?
Yeah, it's a voluntary position, so. Mm-hmm.
And no one was interested?
I'm sure that's something that will come up at the next Lunenburg regional meeting.
The person left.
Yeah, they stepped down a few months ago now, and then, I mean, as we mentioned at the beginning, we just haven't had the opportunity to have a meeting yet.
Okay.
So it is something that is, it's a position that's available, but it relies on somebody to, you know, essentially step up and take it on, so.
And okay. takes a fair bit yeah. of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes.
So can you talk a little bit about this study or this report? So it was with the committee. The report came out in the fall. And you said the next step is looking for approval from council or whatever to send it out more widely. I'm just wondering, like, who has seen this so far? What kind of feedback would we be looking for? Mm-hmm. And, you know, are there certain things that will be prioritized as next steps? Or just trying to get an idea of, like, what actual next steps are.
So the development, there was a working group of Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services members. Then it came to this committee. This committee has public agendas, so some firefighters who pay attention to those agendas are aware of it. But normally when we're working on something large, like adopting a new minimum standard for a fire department or a strategic item like this, we would go to the annual general meeting of the fire service, which happens in the spring every year, and share it there. And then we'd look for Lunenburg Regional to bring feedback back to this committee about what kind of input. So this was, the information in here is very much driven by the firefighters who are providing this volunteer level one training, as well as somewhat like we were supporting them in those discussions, and Chris obviously has some knowledge of the fire service as well. So that's essentially the source of it. So we would like to get some more input from more departments. So if we can get an understanding of whether or not they feel that this will assist in improving the level of training that firefighters have. We really want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make the volunteer job as safe as possible, and part of that involves making sure that firefighters are competent and feel confident in their work. In terms of priorities, it's not a large scope. We're looking at how can we make tangible improvements in the short term. So there's some requests for funding, I think, that will have to come to council after we get the consultation with firefighters completed. And then there's some discussion with the regional facility, which I think necessarily takes longer because we haven't had conversations more than informal ones with other partners about whether or not they're interested, what that might look like, and as I'm sure you know already, intermunicipal cooperation is a long and sometimes very slow process. So I suppose it's not that it's a lower priority, but it will take much longer to get through on a regional facility than it would to implement supports for the local volunteer program or change up how we're doing the funding for specialized training.
Yes.
Yes. I suppose it's like two tiers. There's the promotion and the training program stuff, and then the facility stuff is a longer term. Yeah. I hope that answers your question, Allison.
Councillor Bell.
When you look at this report, it certainly is a blueprint and a foundation of where we might want to go. The other thing that has been happening on the side is, as you know, the last 2 years, there's been money put aside in a reserve fund. Now, we've been having budget discussions for the last month or so, and one of the things that I can confirm is that we did have $100,000 in the draft budget. The final blueprint isn't stamped as approved yet, but there was some questions in those discussions. Do we really need that $100,000? We haven't heard anything from the fire committee. It might be advisable for this committee to send correspondence on to the budget deliberations to make sure that the third $100,000 stays in the budget coming up. And I don't know if that gets sent to Alex or he would direct it to who it needs to be. But we as councillors don't even know what the final destination of this will be. But for me, it's very important that we continue to plan for whatever that might be. It's too easy to lose the funding, or if we're not sure, but the fact that you have the first part of it done, to me, is encouraging that we need to continue on. So you can open that to the floor for discussion. But from my point of view, I would suggest that maybe tonight we suggest that we would like to make sure that stays there.
Yeah. So, any discussion on that particular item? Yes?
I think I'm the person who asked about it at the council table. I don't think that the funding is at risk of anyone saying we don't need that in there. It was just a question of what is it, what's the plan, more information, please. So I don't see it as at risk in the budget, but who knows? I haven't been through a budget process yet, so something could surprise me.
Certainly, I think you can tell from the discussion tonight that it was part of a strategy, as Councillor Bell has pointed out, that training and facilities for training, and as we move forward, we're looking at reshaping the way things have kind of been done in the past, and that we need to look at doing things differently. The committee from Lunenburg Regional started with thoughts and ideas that came out at a meeting prior to you being on council. But, you know, certainly I think that we're moving in a direction that we need to move forward and provide as much as we can to the firefighters to ensure that appropriate facilities. Traveling is, we didn't really talk that much about it, but traveling to places to get training and things and having that centrally located. I mean, Alex did point out that there were a number of facilities around, but still, you still have to go other places and to do certain things. And so I just wanted to make my point that I think that we're moving with this strategy and regional training facility or using my upgrade facilities or whatever, we're molding something. It's new, being innovative, but, you know, at the same time, Councillor Bell has made his point. And I think normally that's done at our budget meeting, which would have been the meeting I missed, actually. We would be including funds for that in.
It was mentioned in there, but it was nothing.
Oh, I see.
There was no, like, ask for a motion or anything.
I see.
To take it to council.
All right. Yes, Councillor Bell.
Well, I would say that you would probably maybe think that there was some councillors there looking out for you, that the money's already there, but in open discussion, nothing, like we were talking about washrooms for Mushroom Beach, And we thought that that would happen this year. Oh, guess what? It's gone. It's moved ahead a year. I'm saying that there's $100,000 sitting there. You should probably cement tonight that you see it as an important thing. Because there's a lot of other projects that $100,000 could easily be spent on if we didn't think you really wanted it.
And I think my comments were made to that point, actually, that we're looking at a strategy. We've got something to move forward with. We've got something that we've got the words. We've got things that that the firefighters are actually telling us and looking at a new way of doing it, which we've never done before. And having appropriate facilities for that is important as well. Yes.
Who would be the connector? So if Mr. Bell is saying somebody from this committee needs to tell the budget committee?
Well, I think he's looking for this committee to recommend to council that we include $100,000 in the budget.
And then, like, do you take it?
Yes. Do I take the
$100,000? No. For another trip, I get it.
That would take great.
Nice trip for $100,000.
No, the normal process would be that if the committee wants to make a decision, you'll have to put a motion on the floor. So there'd be a motion to indicate support to municipal council for the continued contribution to reserves for the regional fire training facility. If the committee moves that motion, then the mechanics are actually our wonderful support, Sandra, there. We'll make sure that the recommendation goes from this committee onto a council agenda. There you go.
So it's the move.
The way he said it.
So we have...
Did you say
it? It's been moved and seconded.
Yeah. The committee...
Any question? Yeah.
I'll just listen back to the recording,
shall
I?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, Alex, I cut you off there, but they were moving and seconding. They had. So any questions on the motion? Yes.
Just that also as a new counselor, I think what you just said, even just providing that little extra context was very helpful.
Okay.
Because I think what some people are wondering is, what is this facility? What is the end idea of this? But what you're saying is that that's not fully formed yet.
No.
But there will be something that the money is needed for. So
it is. And there's 600 volunteers out there and new people coming in. It's constantly moving and changing. And you need to be looking at a strategy for training people and places to train people.
Right.
So question on the motion?
Question.
Question has been called. All those in favor, signify by raising the right hand. Against, motion carried. So then back to the strategy itself. Does it have to go to council, recommending exposure at least to council, so that they can see what we're talking about, and to recommend to them that they approve it so that we could move forward with it with the fire service?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate, just given that it was developed before the election, so you have a slate of half of them are new.
Yes.
And just to make sure that they get to see it before it hits the broader fire service.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, Chris?
I think in the April AGM for the FESC and fire services, that training strategy would be just something good to review there, because you'll have the majority of the fire chiefs present that night. Because a lot of times they may get the package, but they don't always attend Lunenburg regional meetings.
No.
You usually get like 55% or 60%, depending on meetings and depending on what's going on. So in the last number of meetings they had fire calls in the middle of it, and they lost a portion of their group. So I think that'd be a really good place to take that, to just kind of do like a little information package for the chiefs that are, and the ones in that room that night. Even the counselors that aren't on this committee, would actually give them another avenue to hear what's going on too, right?
Yeah. Any other questions?
I think I've heard enough that I could probably do it.
So then we're looking for a motion to recommend the report strategy training to...
I'll make that motion.
Been moved. Do I have a seconder? Seconded by Herb. So it was moved... Alex has a question.
No. Just to note that you want to send the draft along, because you're just looking for more consultation with the fire service, or it's not just so the council's clear, it's not finalized.
No.
Draft form.
Yes, draft format. So it's been moved and seconded. Any questions on that motion? Question been called. All those in favor, signify by raising the right hand. Against? Motion carried.
So when you send it to council, will there be, will it be kind of just remaining with council until you get it out to the chiefs in April?
Well, hoping,
I'm or hoping, maybe timing it?
Yeah, kind of hoping that council just says, yes, we've looked at this, the committee agrees, we're allowing it to be circulated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, because it's already a public document, the draft is available on this. It's now been on multiple agenda packages. It's really mostly an information item. If council had a concern, they would obviously have the opportunity to bring that up, and then we could adjust or discuss with this committee before we had that annual general meeting. So it's essentially an information piece for council. Although if they had a concern, we would obviously pump the brakes.
Yeah. And they may have some questions. I mean, when you look and then you see honorariums and you see this and there's funding and there's things. So that it may raise some questions at council. But at the same time, that's a good thing because it's you know, a change that we need to start looking at to ensure that the people that are doing this are going to want to continue to do it, train others.
And would you encourage councillors to talk to their local fire services about it? The chiefs, or
if they, I don't have a problem with that. I, you know, if they feel that they want to do that, I mean, that's, you know, you have that relationship. Some don't. Some are closer to their chiefs than others, right? But if you have points, you know, you can make them to people like to Chris. Actually, if there's something that you feel that, you know, maybe should be discussed or at this next meeting of this committee, because what we do here usually ends up either going to council or going to the Lunenburg Regional Group, right? So, you know, there's always places that things can go to be discussed. So, and, you know, the more points that someone picks up on it, that might make the thing even better. I mean, sometimes there's things that people have a tendency to just miss a little something or a misunderstanding about how something should be. So, yeah. Yes, Chris?
I'm just gonna mention something. In some fire departments in the past, councils have approached them during for a training, one of their normal training nights, say, listen, can I come and get involved a little bit with your training session and maybe, you know, put on some bunker gear and kind of do little activities with them, and then you kind of get a real feel for what goes on. I know the female firefighter networking day they have annually in Lunenburg County, there was a few of the counselors that have gone to that and been there for the whole day of activities. So it's just another way of kind of getting exposure to fire service, to volunteer fire service, and what they do and what it's about. And it's kind of a neat experience for both sides at the same time, right? So just a thought, something new if you're interested in approaching your fire department, say, hey, listen, can I come sometime? And, you know, majority of them are pretty open, so.
Thanks, Chris. Any comments to that? Okay. We can move on. This is back to Chris, the new fillable fire department registration package.
So, 16. There it is. So the information is basically the same as what's on the other package, and Sandra did the work on this package to get it all together. Her and I sat down a few times, went over it, and it can be tweaked, but it's hard to tweak it once it's in a format like this. It takes a lot of work to tweak it now once it's done. We'll go this year. I'm like I say, about 85% taking the information from the previous registrations and putting on these ones for the fire department, so they don't have to fill out a whole bunch of information again on them. You can fill it here. You can print it off and fill it out by hand. So there's a couple different ways of doing it. Some of the issues we were having with the old spreadsheet, that Excel spreadsheet, was when individuals were filling it out and it kind of went outside the parameters of the spreadsheet. When they printed it off or whatever, you'd get like two lines on this page and two lines on this page. So a lot of times information was kind of like all over the place. And yeah, this format will hopefully keep it all together in a neater package so we can see where everything is. And there's like, we'll just go down through really quick, but if you click on it, you can fill in all the different information areas. So these will all be filled out when the fire departments get them. And there's also like an index to show you where everything is in there and what page is located on, something that wasn't in there before. So it makes it easier to see where things are. So like I say, some of this information was on there before, but it was like in different sheets in different places, and there were things that was asked for from the committee on and the survey that they had done, like what kind of mutual aid is out there and how much automatic mutual aid out there. So the interest was really around automatic mutual aid partners and what they're doing, who has it. So there's actually a spot on there for that. These activities are pretty much the same as what they were before, just spelled out a little easier to see them. Before, they were all bundled up on one line, and now they're like structural firefighting, check a box, how many firefighters are trained for that. Defensive firefighting, check a box, how many firefighters are trained for that. So it's just kind of, it's easier to see them as you go down through it instead of having them all jumbled in one place. And these are just the different levels of what awareness, operation, and technical levels mean in the training of firefighters and their abilities. Here's just talks about what they, when they click on these boxes, it says what they provide for services. So if you look up at the sheet here, it says what the levels of training are that they, and what levels of service they can do or comply with. And then down here, when they click off these boxes, they say these are what they have training for to meet those categories listed above. And then they can say how many firefighters they have for it. So they could have like an awareness box checked off and an operational box checked off and how many firefighters they have trained, because it could be different areas that they're trained in, right? And there are different levels. And that's kind of how that's geared up. And then they ask if there's any limitations to any of these. So some fire departments have notes in there like yes, through the daytime hours, it's hard to always have available firefighters through the daytime, but we have automatic mutual aid time from 6 at night until, or 6 in the morning until 6 at night. So those are some of the things that fire departments are doing now to help with that, and that's just an area for them to do that. And then just ask what they have for mutual aid, if they don't have any, if they have automatic mutual aid or just mutual aid itself. And then the one that's up here by this one allows them to spell out a little bit more detail what the automatic mutual aid is, just so it gives kind of an idea what did they respond to, like MVCs, motor vehicle collisions, or is it for structure fires, or is it a combination of those kind of things. And then here it asks if they have level one firefighter training or if they're pro board certified, so that would be through the fire school. The fire school is the only body allowed in the province to certify firefighters to level one, so that's what that's there for. It's quite a process to have that ability to pro board certify firefighters. And this is just a breakdown of how many active firefighters you have, auxiliary members, junior firefighters, and honorary members. So it's just, I think it's a little simpler way to fill it out. And if some fire departments have more need for space that's what's there, then they can just use one of the empty boxes and fill that information in it. And then, or we can add a sheet next year if we have to. If chiefs come back and say, I need more space here, we can do that. So we added more spots for membership to allow for more numbers there. The contact information for the correspondence to be sent, so via email or letters or whatever through the mail. Then it gives you like the chief officers, treasurer, and secretary, and their contact information. If it's a fire commission, if the chair is there.
You have a question?
Yes. A lot of departments now have two deputy chiefs.
Well, then they would have to maybe fill it in another box somewhere, or just write it, or just fill in. How could they do that?
You could put two in there, could you?
Yeah, just put two in.
They could do that.
Put two in the
one on top of the other.
I can add that in because there's a gap at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
But not now.
But for next year. So if anybody has those kind of comments, like we couldn't figure everything out, but that's a good point because there are several departments that do have DC 1 and 2s now, you're right. So that would be a good catch. And then here we have... I only had one department so far that I just did that had one more apparatus than that was listed here. It was a boat trailer or something. And I just added in a spot that said, what do you have for extra equipment? But the majority of the department stuff all fits in here. So it gives you like the type of apparatus it is or vehicle it is, years, its details, pump date, test date of the pump, pump size, capacity of the tank, what kind of foam it has, and a porta tank size if applicable. So some of these will... If it's a non-pumping apparatus, it would just have not applicable there, not applicable there, NA, NA, NA across the board, right? So, and then if there's any other extra equipment that was like on the other sheet, a specialized equipment, then there's a spot here to fill some of this out. Generators is an area for that. What watts is it? How many do you have? So there's quite a few spaces there for people. Most people aren't going to fill that page, but there's definitely room there. Thermal imaging. Devices, so there's a checkbox here, what type and how many, so it's I think it's going to be a pretty good system once we get down through it. And I'm going to go over this at the AGM too, so fire chiefs and stuff in the room have an idea basically how the flow is. This one here, when you see, when the chiefs, whoever fills it out, sees this, it'll have whatever type of breathing apparatus it is, how many they have, the pressure of the system, manufacturer date, and then they can put their flow check date out here with the copies attached. And what I've done for their cylinders, I'll just put whatever they have, if it's a Scott or an MSA, how many cylinders they have, and I just wrote cylinder in here, or cylinders in here, and how many spares and what pressure they were. So just another way to capture that. The hose, basically the same as it was on the other one. Different diameter hose and how many feet they have. And on truck or spirit, it doesn't really matter as long as you capture the feet of hose you have, because that's one of the things Lindenberg Regional captures.
There's a little, go back there. You've got half inch hose.
It should be one and a half. See the one up there?
Okay, all right, sorry.
It just flowed around, that's all. Yeah. Well, I guess half inch hose, yeah, it wouldn't even be a booster reel, but... dry hydrant locations, so any departments that have dry hydrant locations, they can put them in here. Some departments that have a lot, they actually just attach a sheet to the registration form if they have just one department that has like 30-some dry hydrants, the most in the county. And this is just the station information, like the community name, not emergency number, just basic information that way. Insurance, contact information for the whoever's filling the sheet out. The tax rate form for the tax rates for the year, however much you're going to put in there. Matching grant form, Sandra and I sat down, we kind of tried to get as many of these in here as most departments have, so I think we covered, and there's other ones that they can add if they're not listed. So Sandra did a great job on that. Matching grants, so it's $1,500 is what will be in there. We can make that fixed, I guess, until it's ever changed, but that's the formula that's been utilized for, and that's what's in the policy. This is an application for firefighter recognition.
Chris, so, can you just go back a little bit? I'm back behind you on page 13, actually, or page 29.
13?
29. Just the one rate, fire tax rates. No, the other way, yeah.
Right there.
Like, A and B are saying the same thing. What am I missing there?
Oh, it's meant to be
a commission.
This used to be,
should be a commission in there.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, we didn't,
because Chris did say that's hard to change this, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, most commissions put their everybody's usually just using the same line.
So you need to separate it.
But it can
one
be, yeah.
is for. You could say Section A commission, Section B fire department.
Yeah, because commissions set their own rate,
yeah.
The majority of them. It just comes on the same thing, the council, just to keep it in one place.
All right. Sorry to make you go back there.
No, it's good. So I didn't catch everything. We got the majority of stuff, I think, Sandra. You know, you can't get everything first round. And as it gets filled out by departments, they're going to see some things, too. So this is years of service for firefighters, so this would be their... trying to think what this one is. This is department recognition. So this is like the plaque they hang in the departments, yeah. And there's every 5 years they get a helmet they hang onto it to say they had another 5 years of service. So they'll have either a 20-year, 30-year, or 35 years of service helmet hanging on their plaque to show how many years of service the station's been there. I think this one up here. So this is just the years of service for MODL's 2015-year medal, or the Blue Nose. And then this one here is for the Long Service Award. So this is the one that you see when the firefighters get the 50-year award or their 30 years and up. It has the municipal medal with the CVSA emblem on the front, the municipal emblem on the back. And this is the one for the Long Service that and it gives them a spot to go to so they can go right to the form and fill it out, which makes it a little bit simpler for them. And if they don't have, if they can't jump around that way, we can just supply one for them pretty easy through an email. So I think it's going to make it a little easier to find information onto and go through to pick information out of than the previous one was. So that's kind of all. It was just more for information. I don't think there's anything really new in there from anybody that's seen the registration forms before. It just added some of the things that you guys had asked to be added in the past.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's that. Okay. What else is on the next one?
So then
The next item, pages 36 and 37, is the AGM, just the membership.
So we turn this off for a minute. I had to turn this off, no source. So the next one is on the process at the AGM for nominating people. So if you know somebody who would like to be nominated, they can be nominated. They send something to me a week ahead of time, who the nominations are. And then when they come to the meeting that night, they're read out. And you have to be present in the room in order to
accept the nomination.
Accept the nomination and be voted on. You can't vote by proxy or anything like that. That's kind of how it works. So that actually won't be too much longer, and I'll be sending a package out to the fire service about that. And that if there's anybody that has names on it, and the members that are currently sitting can say that they're willing to sit on the committee again. And then at the annual meeting, we'll have a chance to, if there's more people interested, to have a vote for
nominations from, yeah.
Okay. That's kind of really what that's really about.
Just so that all the members of the committee can understand how that works.
Right.
And members of council are appointed. They were done, and that's good for how long?
Every year that's done.
Okay.
November, I think? Or so every year they picked four councils members. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're definitely not in sync with them, are we?
No.
No.
But it's just the way the registration process and everything works, right?
Yes. So members at large are...
They're staggered.
Staggered.
Yeah. So that's that. Insurance, I guess, is...
Yeah.
So you're the chair.
Yes. I'm just wanting to make sure that everybody understands how that works for the AGM for members of the committee. 6.4 is the insurance liability and vehicles, not buildings and that. It's just liability and vehicles?
Buildings as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, apologies that this is a verbal update. It's been a very busy season for municipal staff going through orientation. And then launching right into an in-depth budget process. But I did want to, because council dealt with this week, I wanted to make sure that the Fire and Emergency Services Committee heard about it as well. So for those that don't have the background, the municipality purchases insurance in bulk on behalf of the fire service. And this is to help provide consistent coverage and also get some cost savings because we're buying it all together. The last two times that the municipality has gone to market, we've used a procurement process with our regional neighbors, coordinated through the Municipal Joint Services Board. So like the previous time, we went out and published a request for proposals for insurance services as a group. It included the district's fire service, the municipality's insurance for itself, the insurance for the LCLC, the insurance for the waste site, and the Municipal Joint Services Board, and then our two towns who are part of the MJSB with us, being the town of Mahone Bay and the town of Bridgewater. So we got three proposals back from insurers. There was our current insurer, BFL, also Gallagher's, who had been our previous insurer, and then a third company by the name of Marsh. All of the proposals were adequate. They met the minimum qualifications. And as part of that group, one of the reasons why we like to go out together is not only do we think we get better pricing because we're buying it in bulk, but insurance is complex. And so we actually hire a consultant to help evaluate the proposals to make sure that they are good quality proposals. And so there was some evaluation done there and confirmation that each of them could provide the service that was requested. So there was an evaluation process based 30% on price, 70% on quality of proposal. So in addition to that evaluation by the consultants, there was some assessment based on references, quality of the package, additional services provided, for example, municipalities, most of us get insurance companies to review any contracts before we sign them for concerns. So making sure that those kinds of services were available. In terms of the actual coverage, the RFP provided the exact same insurance coverage that's currently provided. So all the firms had to bid on providing insurance for the same types of coverages with the same deductibles.
Okay.
So no change in the insurance program, which I know is important to the fire service. In terms of pricing, it was actually good confirmation that it's important to regularly go to market. BFL had been providing annual increases to the premiums. We have to renew the premiums annually, but only procure them once every 5 years. And their justification, one of the primary drivers in their explanation was that market prices for insurance are increasing. And that certainly has been the case, but out of the three bids, BFL came in significantly more expensive than the others for the comprehensive insurance package. And so council this week awarded insurance to Gallagher. The difference in pricing for the fire service, because there's two components for MODL, fire insurance, the gross cost is going to be $388,814. Last year's total bill for fire insurance was $452,424. So we're going to see a savings of around $63,000 for the fire service. This wasn't low bid for the fire service. Marsh was actually offering lower pricing, but the comprehensive cost of the fire service for MODL's insurance and for it combined with the evaluation meant that Gallagher's was the preferred contract. But we're really happy to see that going out for competitive pricing means we got some competition between them and BFL. Although they sharpened their pencil, it certainly wasn't enough. So even their bid was lower. They submitted a bid for $388,000 for the fire insurance when last year the bill was $452,000. Gallagher's was lower than that and Marsh lower still. There is a 10% cancellation fee. We went out for procuring the service to switch over for April 1st, but the fire insurance cycle runs on October. And so now that council has made the decision, we're actually in negotiations with Gallagher's to see if we can keep the BFL insurance for the length so that we don't have to pay the 10% cancellation fee. Because 10% on $450,000 is a lot of money. So what we'd like is for Gallagher's to honor the quote and give us 6 months of service so that we can then put the renewal back with the rest of the entities that have been procuring insurance together so that we don't pay the cancellation fee, but we do get the pricing that came out of the bulk procurement. I know this is a lot of information to be providing verbally. We will have more information for the fire departments because it will involve switching over insurers. And I can also provide a written report once I get clear of budget, and I can actually put some of this information to paper for the committee and then for the fire departments themselves. But overall, we're really happy. It's good news for us that we can maintain the same coverage, but we have cost savings over previous years with BFL. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
I guess it comes as somewhat of a surprise to me because we haven't heard anything about, normally the committee is aware of it, so I guess this is just later or because we didn't have meetings maybe? Or
I believe we did talk about the fact that we were going back out to market, but we weren't intending to change the insurance
at the last meeting
program. I think it was well before that because it's a long process.
I had sent out emails and I had mentioned at a number of Lunenburg Regional Committee meetings that that's what was taking place. But we didn't really have any information until just the other week when they came back with the bids from the Joint Services Board. So they actually bid it on, like Alex said, the same package that they have now.
Yeah. That was my only question. I just didn't.
Okay.
just for fun.
So you know the money that has been saved for the fire
mm-hmm.
and emergency services? Could that go with the 100,000?
Two different pots.
I know, it's always a different pot.
Yeah. Two different pots.
Oh, yes. So the fire departments are responsible for their own insurance bills,
yes.
although there is a grant that comes from this committee. And so those savings are actually passed directly on to the fire departments. So even better than the municipality holding it reserve, it's just savings on next year's operating budget for the fire departments.
Okay. So you'll get something to us when to the fire service when you have it. Okay.
Should be no problem getting it for the next meeting.
Okay. Good. Okay. That's the insurance. That was nothing else on that, Alex. Next one is the Cumberland County Fire Services. This is just a discussion, no documentation, but just some discussion.
Yeah. Again, I would prefer to have some information in writing for you, but we haven't had a lot of time, and because there was a significant issue up in Cumberland County that's relevant to the fire service, I was hoping that the committee could have some preliminary discussions, and ultimately my recommendation would be that this committee asks Lunenburg Regional to start some conversations about the issue itself. So just to make sure everybody understands exactly what we're talking about, it's an item that's been in the provincial news recently. There was a fire response in Cumberland County by a fire department. The chief was driving the vehicle that struck a victim who then died. And then further compounding the issue, the chief submitted false reports about the incident. It's not actually clear if this is even relevant to the current situation, but the chief had previously lost his license due to a drunk driving incident. So there were obviously significant concern. The municipality up there had recently adopted a new bylaw that included some provisions around a code of conduct, and also gave the municipality the ability to remove a chief if they had violated the code of conduct. And so they made use of those provisions after this incident. I was hoping that this committee could have some discussion because this type of issue presents some really challenging concerns and risks for the fire service. Just in a quick review, Chris and the CAO, Tom McEwen, and I had some conversation. We see some legal concerns, insurance concerns, and then also reputational risk. So just to cover a little bit off on those, following up on this incident in Cumberland, it's almost guaranteed that there will be legal action taken against the fire department in question. And almost certainly that legal action will also name the municipality. It's just the way that that kind of legal stuff takes place, that, you know, they hunt for deep pockets. So you name as many respondents as you can. Municipality will likely get named in that as well. There is insurance in place. So if there's... for example, an accident takes place on a fire scene, you have insurance for that. Insurers, though, doing their due diligence, will look for reasons why they shouldn't have to pay the claim. Some reasons that an insurer might deny coverage, so you would not only be on the hook for any kind of damages caused, but then could also be open to further financial exposure for like future loss of earnings and those types of things. So if there was any alcohol involved by anybody on the scene, or if anybody had done something illegal, for example, driving without the appropriate qualifications or without a license. So on top of the legal risk, you have the concern that, you know, you have insurance in place, but if the insurers find some reason why they should don't have to pay, they won't. And then there's the reputational risk. So a complication that happened up in Cumberland County after the incident is that some residents placed a 911 call. The fire department then responded, and the residents refused the first responders from coming onto their property because of the incident that had happened previously on the incident. So they were refusing the fire department's assistance, which is a real reputational concern, and I think it's one that, you know, the incident didn't happen here, and thankfully I don't think that there's concern amongst our residents that we don't have a dedicated fire service that's committed to providing good service, but it is a real concern that this type of thing has happened, and we know from our own structures that, you know, it's not impossible for this type of scenario to happen, just in a different county. So from our perspective, from a staff perspective, we think that there should be some kind of discussion about whether or not a code of conduct is appropriate and how the fire service wants to approach these types of concerns. And then the two issues that are most likely to cause some kind of denial of claim by an insurer, namely first responder having consumed alcohol before coming to a scene and ensuring that drivers have appropriate qualifications, are two areas that we'd really like to have some kind of discussion in Lunenburg County to see what kind of steps we might want to take in that area.
Yeah, because in fact, interesting enough, because when we did the strategy back in 2023, the member at large, the gentleman, well, they can't remember his name actually.
Mr. Fancy?
Randy?
Yes. Randy. And in fact, code of conduct was one of his parts that he was very concerned about, and we kind of said, yes, you're right, but we kind of looked at priorities in a way, and we were ahead of ourselves, but we didn't do anything about it. We certainly felt that it was important, but we didn't make any decisions moving in that direction. And and in Cumberland, I know that it's a little bit different there because I think the county actually owns the building and the trucks. There's societies, I think, doing something, but I'm not sure what, but it is a little different than it is here. But still, code of conduct shouldn't make any difference in any environment. I think that even, you know, chiefs need some tools for themselves even to work within their own structure, because we were talking about it before we started about how do you know, does a person that they've lost their license, do they have a valid license? All of those things kind of, you start thinking about just, losing your driver's license for speeding, I don't know, something, or drinking, and how does the chief actually know about that? And sometimes it's pretty verbal. It would get passed around if it's known. But anyway, we were talking about that before we started the meeting.
Yeah. Just in terms of structure, Cumberland County does have some different administrative structures, but their system is the same, where they're independent societies, and they register with the municipality to be a fire service provider.
But they did build the fire halls and they buy the trucks. There's a difference there in that part. From here.
Yes. But I understand what you're saying.
But the nuts and bolts of the society are still there, and what guides each one in their operations.
Yeah, so I get the part that's important in this discussion is that, like us, fire departments are independent organizations.
Right.
But there's a collective risk. We all buy insurance together.
Yeah.
So if there's an issue, that affects premiums for all departments. If there's a reputational issue, that's going to affect all departments. And it's a similar structure in that fire departments are all independent volunteer organizations.
Yes.
So there's it's not the case, if we had a municipal employee who had a suspended license and then was driving a municipal vehicle, we have personnel policy to address those kinds of disciplinary issues, and that's not the case here.
No.
So we would like to have FESC and then hopefully Lunenburg Regional have some of these conversations about what's the most appropriate way to do it that's respectful of department's autonomy but does create some kind of protection.
For sure. And I personally would agree that we need to start talking about it. And like I said, we talked about it back in 2023, you know, and this event has just brought it to the surface. And it's a sad situation, but so easily can happen. And having a code of conduct, I think, is something that we need to start the discussion with the fire service to start looking at that and having something that ensures that there's a way to resolve things when they kind of crop up like that, right? So, comments? Yes, Councilor Bell? Oh, sorry, go ahead then.
Yeah, I think sending it to Lunenburg Regional is appropriate. I think we've brought it up here, but the conversation does definitely need to happen at the fire service level. Think, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to deal with it, but it is something that we need to deal with because we don't know when this could come up in our area, and that's the thing. We need to have that protection, that reputational protection, legal, financial protection for all of us. So I think that taking it to Lunenburg Regional would be a very appropriate next step, in my opinion, so I would support that.
Okay, Councilor Bell?
And it just comes back to being responsible. And incidentally, all new councillors that have been recently elected, the province made it mandatory for certain training to be taken, and we have to sign on to a code of conduct contract where if we violate it, we can be removed from office. That's something that never occurred before in the province. So I think everybody at every level is trying to make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else have comments? Yes.
I've heard of some incidents that definitely makes this something important to consider. And I'm sure this will be discussed, but I think the language is very important when it comes to this kind of thing because some of the language in this example I find a little bit broad. For example, you know, saying someone shall be of good character, you know, like who determines what that means exactly. So just, you know, to be very careful with the language, make sure we're not discouraging anyone from joining the fire service.
Thank you. Yes.
Dealing with this code of conduct, do we know right now, like, I know with our department up home, as soon as I get a new member to join, we have our own done up that they sign on, just as part of our new member package. Do we have any idea how many departments are doing that now on their own?
No, we don't have. We wouldn't have an exact number, but I know there are departments that do that. And I think this is just another step above that protection also, right? Because it's fine for subordinates under the chief officers. If something happens, the chief officers can deal with that. But say it's at the chief level and nobody's willing to deal with that, then it gives the ability for a municipality to step in if they have to in some certain cases like this one where it wasn't able to be dealt with any other way. So that's kind of why they enacted this when they did a year ago for that reason. Most times, you're right, the chief officers can usually use their own code of conduct and policy to deal with a lot of internal things. But this is when it starts at that next level and there's an inability for them to deal with that from within. And that's kind of where that kind of stems from. Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
It does some, but like even myself, I'm the chief up there, but I still have to sign the code of conduct for our department. So if I bend some boundaries, my officers are there to know I'm not doing it too. Yeah. So it still comes back on me if I don't follow them same code of conduct rules.
Yeah. It was a discussion point with when we were doing the strategic planning that onboarding and orientation is because they're all different departments, different processes. Yes. Some of them are more robust than others. It's wonderful to hear that you do have a code of conduct in place in your department. It's good to hear that we'll have some local examples if that's where the Lunenburg Regional wants to go to pull from.
Yeah.
And then I think that there's two discussions, like what needs to be in that base code of conduct. And then what's the mechanism there, both for within a department and then if it's unable to be addressed within the department?
Yeah. I think that, most, or a lot, not most, I won't say most, but a lot of the fire departments do have code of conduct. And, you know, I think that. So is this something that would be a bylaw or part of MDL policy number 36? How would you envision that?
We have not looked into any of that.
All right.
It became a, as soon as we saw the headlines, like, how relevant is that to us?
Yeah.
So Cumberland County has done it in a bylaw.
I noticed that, yes.
Separate from, I believe it's separate from a policy around registration.
Okay.
Not sure what the rationale was for them doing that. Yeah. And to be honest, we're not anywhere close to that point of thought about it. I've essentially shared a summary of all of our thinking about it to this date, that we should have this conversation here. We have no idea what form it should take, and we would love to have conversations with the fire service so that we can do it together.
Yes.
When you volunteer for the fire services, is there a police check done? And is it, if there is it year? Like my job, I always, every year we had to sign and say, you know, yeah, we're still okay. I hadn't had any charges or anything against me in that year. Is there anything like that?
Depends on the department. Each one sets their own. Like my department, we do a driver's abstract check, police background check, the code of conduct. It's all in the new application process.
So that would be a good thing to standardize.
The biggest issue I got is getting the information back from the RCMP.
Really?
I got a 50-50 chance if I ever get the papers back.
Wow.
We do them when we join. But if we would go out and request a criminal background check every year, our local RCMP office would hang us. You take 600 members coming in there in three detachments, they would have a conniption fit.
Well,
no.
Like, we didn't have to go and get the check every year. There was just a form that said, yeah, I have not had any charges against me. And so then if something came up, they've got that documentation that you swore that there wasn't anything. So in the case of, like, if that fire chief had signed it, but he had lost his license and wasn't forthcoming, then that would cover action against him.
Because we do a criminal background check, then we are also in the process of doing a vulnerable sector check as well, because we're dealing with elderly people, and so that's on our scope, and with the child registry, because we're dealing with young people.
Yeah.
So it's just not one. It's like you're looking at three different background checks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So at the beginning, you get it, but then every year, it's just a form that you sign saying nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they fill it out correctly.
And if they don't, it could come back and bite them if anything ever happened, because now they've lied, and that's on record.
Yeah.
A level of due diligence for the department.
Yeah. Yep. No question. It's something that needs to be done.
Well, not every regional has the code of conduct, but they tabled it right while they were doing their bylaws.
Yes.
That's something they might be able to tweak. And
yeah.
I just had put that on there from Cumberland County just as something to generate.
Well, it's
discussion,
good, though,
right?
Because we did talk about it, but we just didn't do anything about it. And then when something happens.
Chop-chop.
Yeah. Chop-chop is right.
But that one incident kind of paints a picture for some people, like all over the province. It's like, are they all the same now? That's the sad thing about it.
Yeah.
So
Councillor Bell?
I do think that if you had a criminal records check done for new members coming on board, I know Councillor Reinhart and myself are aware of a situation where that would have been caught when an issue came about that we were made aware of, but we don't get involved with policing fire departments. But we do have to consider if we think that there's liability that the municipality could have. So I would recommend that not every year, but if you're taking on somebody as a new member, especially when they come from abroad, because a lot of people are moving in from out west, Ontario, or whoever, we don't know these people. We welcome them to the community, but we don't know when they leave their former province what their situation was. And maybe a records check like this could pick something up that the local fire department should be aware of.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
We've had a couple of people over the years that come in and want to join the fire department. And as soon as we pass them the paper, we want a criminal background check. It's the last we see of them.
What does that tell you?
That, it's no problem to figure it out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Any other questions on that or points? Yes?
I just wonder around, like, MFRs. Is there any kind of other things to be thinking about within a policy like this around people who are dealing with people in medical crisis?
But MFRs are like they're controlled in a different manner than
okay.
VHS's.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I think they're even covered under an insurance when you're doing MFR as well.
You have to be trained, and everybody.
By then, you're covered under their insurance.
Church.
Okay.
But only if you're on a call.
MFRs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are fire department members as well, at least the ones that work.
Yeah, but as an MFR, it's under authority of EHS, right?
Yes. If I'm following your line of thinking, it's like, should there be some form of background check for medical first responders because they are responding to folks in medical distress? If it's adopted for the fire service, it would apply to them as well because they're fire service members.
Okay. Yeah, it's under EHS, though. They're qualifying the individuals. And training them.
To do that. Is part of their process? Does that involve a background check?
Well, I would think it's provincially.
I've never.
There we go.
Really? That's hard to believe. I would have just assumed.
Perhaps they're assuming that the fire department's doing it.
Assume nothing. All right. Nothing else there?
Is the committee, Emily, you mentioned you're comfortable, you would like to see it go to Lunenburg?
Yes, regional. It'll be on a report to go between Chris and myself to the LRFES meeting. So.
Okay. Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, it is important. So. I'm going to jump right to the next meeting date, which is the annual meeting, April the 9th of 25 at 7 p.m. at
Best Western.
And as I mentioned, it is the annual meeting. So this is our last meeting of this particular group. And then whatever comes from the annual will be then back to the May meeting here. So we're looking for a motion to adjourn, I guess.
So moved.
Been moved, okay. Seconded by her. Thank you. Discussion.